Welcome to Free Unabridged Recording of Requiem's Dagger by Randall J. Wombeam, Book 1 of the Foothold Saga, read by London Homer, Madison Volley, and Caleb Bristol. Print and Kindle versions of Requiem's Dagger are available on Amazon.
Chapter 11. William spent the night dwelling on the bad news he would be delivering in the morning. If they were to explore the mortal realm, they would have to make sacrifices. William started with Jack since he was his closest friend. "I need you to change your features." Jack scrunched his features, squinting his eyes and sticking out his tongue. "Is this good?" "No, I mean magically. I know you have the power." He flicked the end of his friend's nose. "I think your usual good looks might attract too many unwanted stares." "I like people staring at me. It makes me feel important." "Can you do what I ask?" Jack caressed his skin. His rumpled flesh became putty as he worked his spell, shrinking his nose and reducing the number of warts. He still did not appear entirely mortal. His nose was a little thin and pointy, but mortals would no longer be curious about why someone was wearing a Halloween mask in the middle of summer. True to his word, Hashimoto traveled back into the mortal realm and was stuck waiting for the bank to open. William asked him, "The brother's hunter implied it rained constantly, but I've yet to see a single drop."
"True, it does like to rain here, but Seattle doesn't rain that often. We like to tell people otherwise to discourage them from moving here. Also, the summers have been unusually dry for the last couple of years due to climate change."
Hashimoto dug through the desk in his office, handing William several items.
"I don't know why I kept these after we put him to sleep, but your friend needs them."
Dagfinn was resting with his belly exposed when William wrapped the dog collar around his neck. "I'm really sorry, but you have to wear this for appearances."
"You better take this bloody thing off my neck before I rip out your throat."
William told him, "It's about to get worse."
"Worse? You're a dead man."
William handed Hendrina the leash, a chewable plastic bone, and some doggy poop bags. "He'll need to be leashed if he goes anywhere with us. Everything else is for appearance." Dagfinn sniffed the bone, wrinkling his nose.
"This has been used."
"You're not allowed to go inside buildings, and you'll have to behave yourself if you're tied outside. No being rude to strangers." Cole stepped through the mirror, proclaiming,
"I have brought a solution. It took some convincing, but she has promised to help."
The old woman following him immediately turned around and shoved her hand into the mirror. Satisfied she could return home, she strolled around the store, clutching her fur coat while repeatedly checking that the passage remained open. She studied everything, eventually obsessing over a painting of a unicorn. The witch played with the lid of a black ceramic container before deciding she had wasted enough time. Cole set his sword on a desk, the witch raising her hand, mumbling meaningful lyrics. A white and red glow flowed from her fingers, encompassing the sword. John Hashimoto stood over the desk, obsessed with the weapon as it shrunk to the size of a safety pin.
"The enchantment is easy to break,"
the crone explained, allowing Cole to demonstrate by squeezing the weapon. The sword emerged full size, and he caught the blade in a gloved hand.
"But once broken, you'll have to return for a second spell."
Hashimoto insisted on watching the weapon shrivel to the size of toy cars, clapping his hands. William may have imagined it, but Hashimoto seemed younger than when they first met. His limp was less pronounced as well. He stopped William from reluctantly handing over his walking stick.
"No need. As long as you look the part, people will assume you're some outdoor-obsessed hipster."
After they convinced Hendrina to relinquish her weapons, the witch dashed through the mirror.
"Next time you find me, I'm not coming back here."
Hashimoto checked his watch.
"It looks like the bank is opening soon. I better head off."
"Tina," William waved to grab the pixie's attention. She was fluttering around the painting, suspiciously eyeing the jar the witch had picked up.
"Now you have to pick on her. You're a real dick, you know that?"
Dagfinn griped. Tina hovered in front of William, eyeing the painting.
"Yes?"
"I know you're not going to like this." He shot a warning look at Dagfinn before the dog could say anything. "When we're outside, we'll need you to hide. Can you do that?" The pixie landed on Jack's hat, covering herself with the peacock feather.
easily.
One friend remained for William to speak with, and it was the worst news William was going to deliver. He found Natsumi downstairs, resting in a chair, staring out the front window with Vincent beside her. When he approached, she sagged in the chair.
I'm not allowed to go, am I?
I'm sorry, he admitted, watching her tail flick indignantly. It's obvious you're not immortal.
I'm afraid I disagree with your interpretation of this dilemma, Vincent said with a casual wave of his gold glove. I apologize for not asking for permission this morning, but the mortals were in great haste and I thought someone should get a sense of their particular fashion tastes. I believe a long coat and a suitable hat would disguise Natsumi's true nature as long as she avoids fidgeting. Besides, did you not hear the mother's compliment? People will believe she's wearing a costume as long as we can provide a believable excuse for how she animates her ears and tail. Which we don't have, he reminded Vincent. However, Natsumi had perked up when Vincent was talking, and he didn't wish to injure her feelings after making her feel dejected. We'll try your suggestion, but if she attracts too much outside attention...
I'll stay here,
she finished for him. William drew Vincent aside, discussing his findings. Outside of Hashimoto's advice and the people walking past the windows, the Fae were uncertain how they should dress. Vincent determined that people did not wear heavy backpacks like William, not unless they were hiking, a discovery he made speaking to a couple of mortals. With fine facial hair that complemented my attire, they wished to know where I had purchased my vest. I lied, saying I had sewn it myself, which momentarily satisfied their curiosity. Jack asked, Are you certain they weren't making fun of you? Most certainly not. I'm positive their compliments were genuine and not at my expense. John H. returned from the bank, asking for help carrying coffee and pastries from his car. He passed everyone $200 spending cash, adding another $50 to the three women. A single penny would have been difficult for Tina to carry, so William accepted the cash intended for her. What she could possibly spend it on, he didn't ask. You didn't have to do this.
Don't be stupid. Hashimoto pulled a sapphire the size of his finger from his pocket. Amaranta gave me this as an apology, with a promise for more. My family is going to be rich, so don't think I'm doing anything special.
Cole peered at his coffee, a look of disgust on his face. William sniffed his drink. Not to your taste?
It's foul.
William sipped, finding the aroma a little pale and the taste not unlike drinking sand. Hashimoto said,
I remember this stuff tasting better. It's sort of rubbery and flavorless now.
It's the lack of magic, Jack explained, tossing a muffin at William. Elizabeth said,
How do you stomach this?
Hashimoto dumped the coffee and pastries in the trash before shadowing them to the clothing store. He promised to help, but they had already descended on the clothing aisle before he crossed the street. Stratton was eyeing a woman's dress, and his chitin was halfway off when Hashimoto stopped him.
This is the women's section, and they have dressing rooms.
The teenage girls manning the cash registers were clearly disappointed when Stratton pulled his clothing back on. After Stratton's performance, their interest in watching the outlandish customers continued to grow until Vincent asked for fashion advice, distracting them. Cole finished first, choosing a pair of blue jeans with complimentary boots. His muscles bulging under his t-shirt, the girls blushed as they watched him model for Elizabeth. They sighed sadly when he hid his physique with a leather jacket. Stratton's dressed nearly identical to Cole, choosing a pink tank top over the standard t-shirt. Another girl had joined the giggling teens, bringing a young man with her. They mostly appreciated Stratton, with a few glances at William and Cole as an afterthought. Hashimoto handed a felt jacket to William, explaining,
Just wear some jeans and a hiking shoes, and you're good to go.
He also supplied him a shoulder bag.
Most people carry their computers in these. If you have anything important, stick it in here. Just remember, be careful of pickpockets and building security.
William thanked him. He left several crucial items behind in his backpack, including the wooden box containing Requiem's dagger. When William asked Vincent why he was not looking for clothing, he chided him. As I implied earlier, mortals find my clothing charming. The women were having a harder time acquiring outfits, partially because the selection had mentally overstimulated them. Overwhelmed by the dresses, pants, shirts, jewelry, and accessories, they huddled together asking Elizabeth's opinion. The laughter rolling from the women's shoe aisle could be heard on the other side of the store. When William asked what they found so amusing, Hendrina shoved a high-heeled shoe in his face.
How do they walk?
By the time the women finished, Dagfinn placed his front paws on the window, pathetically pleading to join them. When he noticed William, he narrowed his eyes and mouthed, "You will pay. You will pay." The woman showing off did not attract as much attention as the men, although a middle-aged customer walked into a clothing rack watching Elizabeth model. Elizabeth had shown a better understanding of mortal fashion, picking a pair of leggings, running shoes, a simple shirt, with a complimentary jacket. Natsumi had taken to wearing bright colors, which were subdued by the black trench coat Vincent procured for her. They had difficulty finding a hat that didn't squash her ears painfully against her skull. Eventually, they agreed to cut holes into the brim, pretending her ears belonged to the hat. Hashimoto yawned. "You know, most people find this sort of thing tedious, but you seem to be enjoying yourselves a little too much." Bored, Cole returned to the antique store, taking Dagfinn with him. Hendrina already finished, but she was reluctant to change inside the dressing room and present herself. Hashimoto explained to her it was wise to ensure everything fit properly before buying anything, and she grudgingly agreed. She emerged with a pair of charcoal-colored jeans, sneakers, and an emerald t-shirt under a black leather jacket. A smoky gray scarf obscured her lower face. They tried to dissuade Jack from buying the clothes he selected, offering to help him, but that only made him more adamant to purchase his treasured new possessions. When he stepped out of the dressing rooms, a customer laughed. Jack somehow unearthed a blue and neon green paisley shirt and a brown tweed jacket complete with leather patches. William admitted with the orange pants and cowboy boots Jack had fashioned the tackiest wardrobe imaginable. Hashimoto said, "He remembers what I told you about not drawing attention to yourselves, right?" "He does, and he doesn't care." For the most part, they were now suitably attired to walk to the library. The foray into the clothing store had taken several hours longer than William estimated, and by the time they changed into their new outfits, lunch was ready. After the disaster with breakfast, they were happy to devour the cheese and crackers Amaranta provided.
"You all look wonderful,"
she lied, smirking beneath her mask as she eyed Jack. Hashimoto told them to wash and dry the clothing, which would have delayed their trip to the library another day. When William mentioned they were eager to leave, Hashimoto told him, "That's fine, but don't complain to me about the rash." Despite an overabundance of concrete and bricks, William was delighted by Bellevue. The buildings had enough individualistic designs to keep him entertained, and the flora lessened the intensity of the city streets. The Fae edged close to the buildings, keeping their distance from the metal machines shooting past. Vincent was unalarmed by the automobiles and found their antics almost as amusing as the mortals who stopped to watch them. The library was spacious, with an open flight of stairs and a slanted wooden ceiling. They managed to secure a white table on the second floor, where they could talk in hushed voices. William and Hendrina guarded the table, waiting for everyone to return with armfuls of books before rummaging through the shelves for items of interest. They were determined to read as much as possible, returning tomorrow for more information if needed. Dagfinn would hate them. He only agreed to stay behind, leashed outside by a fascinating sculpture of a head with animal motifs, if Tina kept him company. He assured William they would behave, that the mortals would never notice the talking dog and pixie. William returned with several tourist guidebooks on Seattle and the rest of the world, just as Elizabeth was saying,
"Is it just me, or are all the mortals staring at our butts?"
"I can't imagine why," Jack said. "Your butt is perfectly smooth and heart-shaped. No creases or anything interesting." Hendrina dryly replied,
"You're not imagining it, and they aren't staring. They're leering."
"I don't know what you're complaining about," Stratton voiced. "They're admiring the view. Can you blame them? They haven't seen anyone as gorgeous as us in their lives." Hendrina snapped,
"Says the person lucky enough to have a penis."
William coughed. The entire library was listening to their conversation. "Jack, I have something you might be interested in," William whispered, demonstrating how loud their discussion should remain. "There's this wall. Sorry, it looks like they steamed the gum off." He continued flipping pages, absorbing all the museums and cultural information available in the book. Cole, who selected his research material based on the terrifying monsters on the covers, handed a mythology book to Stratton.
"You might want to look at this."
Stratton glanced through the book, becoming more alarmed with each page.
"I don't understand.
This is Olympus, not Greece. This is our history, but it's wrong. The Minotaur was never defeated by Theseus.
How do mortals know about Olympus?
Hendrina asked. Cole displayed a children's book showing a boy and a girl approaching a candy house, followed by a book with a pixie on the cover.
How do they know any of this? I think studying these books is a good idea because these stories are frighteningly real.
Not as scary as what I have,
Elizabeth said, showing them a medical text.
This world is hell. People get cancer, not because they pissed off some powerful Fae Lord. They're just unlucky. Or if they smoke or spend too much time in the sun, which seems pretty stupid, consider. Gross! Mortal women actually carry babies inside them? How do they?
She slammed the book shut, shoving several books away from her.
Don't read these, just don't.
Natsumi presented a drawing of the sun surrounded by the planets.
The universe is huge!
She flipped the pages of the book showing photos of stars.
We are insignificant specks!
Elizabeth said,
get this, they believe matter cannot be created or destroyed.
The Fae shared a laugh and Hendrina asked,
then where do I get my cooking supplies?
William speculated, maybe that's why the mortal realm is huge, everything couldn't fit. For several hours, they continued presenting their findings. They were no longer concerned with being overheard. They were having too much fun, laughing. William imagined. Hashimoto's advice about the library had proven more valuable than William imagined. He would have to find a way to thank him. Had it not been for their mortal friend, they would have aimlessly meandered the streets with no idea where to go, and he admitted they were enjoying themselves. Jack held up a book to display a brightly colored peacock spider, when a tiny green figure slammed into the table. Tina's broken wings buzzed as she tried to lift herself, blood trickling out of the hole where her right leg belonged. Chapter 12.
Dagfinn!
Hendrina screamed.
I need you!
A dreamlike darkness enveloped the library. The lights were still on, but had a subdued feeling to them, as if the light was fighting its way through a heavy fog. Jack scooped Tina into his hands, pressing his sleeve into her bleeding wound. A tiny scream erupted from between his fingers.
Sorry,
Jack whimpered. William dug into his shoulder bag, finding the handkerchief and tossed it at Jack, who carefully tied it to her hip. Hendrina stood at the railing, screaming,
Dagfinn, where are you?
When he didn't appear, she turned to everyone, a sudden panic in her eyes, as she whipped a fully formed bow and quiver from inside her jacket. Cole produced what appeared to be a toy war hammer, squeezing it. The mortals were more concerned about the lack of proper reading light than they were about the individuals brandishing archaic weaponry. William asked, can Tina talk? Jack shook his head. She's passed out.
Give her a drop of this, just in case.
Cole threw Jack his hip flask. Jack dumped a drop of the violet liquid onto his finger, carefully shoving his fingernail into Tina's mouth to force the potion down her throat.
Something's here!
Natsumi screamed, pointing across the room.
I swear I saw it!
Andrina's arrow struck a stack of books with a deafening thud.
What was it?
William asked.
I don't know.
Hendrina shook her head.
I only saw a shadow and pale flesh.
A figure appeared on the first floor, a white blob flickering with each step. A massive hand reached out, crushing the skull of the man tending the desk with a sickening pop. His body hit the floor as the blob wavered, vanishing back into the shadows. No one screamed. The mortals on the first floor were rooted in place, their brains processing what just happened. When their minds woke up and screamed danger, they bolted for the nearest doors. Their silence frightened William more than the librarian's murder.
What was that? Cole hissed, excitement edging into his voice.
Vincent searched the bookshelves, his sword cane pointed out in front of him.
That was a minion of the dead queen. Believe me, I've met his ilk.
The library darkened, a chill spreading frost over the books. Chains rattled, always a split second before William turned his head.
Do you know what it is?
Not specifically. It's a creation of lure, if I remember correctly.
Jack popped out of existence with the speed William had not known he possessed, a meaty fist slamming his chair. The burly mass of putrid white flesh did not fade. It revolved to face William. The monstrosity was mostly chest, with two stubby legs, its elongated arms holding the bulk of its weight. Where the head should have sat atop the shoulders was a smooth hump. A gaping maw of mashing teeth dribbling with rancid oily saliva was stuck in the middle of its broad chest. Wrapping around its body and up its right arms were hefty silver chains. The creature did not look at William. It had no eyes to do so, but it sensed where he was, one decomposing hand reaching out to him. The silver chains flew from the arm, striking the railing behind William. Andrina's arrow landed inside the gaping mouth, bathing the placid flesh in golden fire. Shadows absorbed the creature, and it vanished. Run! William didn't have to scream. They were already rushing for the front entrance, listening for the jangling chains, straining to predict where the monster would emerge. Shadows shimmered in front of Cole. He swung his warhammer into the creature's side. Ribs cracked from the blow, but the monster didn't appear to notice. They reached the front entrance, Andrina aiming an arrow at a bookcase. The monster flickered in front of her, and she released an arrow into the books. Fire splashed off the arrow, setting books ablaze. The flames landing on the monster's chalky skin continued to burn through the muscle into the bone. Its body shuddered in ecstasy. Outside, the sunlight had a muted feel. Frost had spread across the grass and trees, icicles forming onto the nearby roofs and branches. Gawkers were standing on the sidewalk, shivering. Someone mumbled,
"It's happening here, too."
Sirens wailed in the distance. Dagfinn limped along the lawn, hip askew, his fur matted with fresh blood. Andrina wrapped her arms around his neck, tightly clutching the dog against her chest. Stratton ran into traffic, shoving his foot onto a car's bumper.
Out!
He reached his arms around the sedan, lifting slightly. The driver and passenger, realizing the car was actually moving, leapt out of the doors as he hoisted the machine above his head. He grunted,
"How do they move so easily if they weigh this much?"
The shadows shimmered and folded inward as a whitish figure appeared by the library's entrance. Chains vaulted from its arms as Stratton chucked the car, smashing the creature into the brick wall. Elizabeth raised her hands, a cold wind stirring her hair. Ice shot from her outstretched fingers, encasing the car and the creature. A tornado of pea-sized hail and frost churned around her, icy white flames burning on the tips of her frosted fingernails. A woman in the crowd nervously recorded Elizabeth's spell with her phone. Elizabeth screamed,
"I don't know if I can contain this thing."
Vincent said,
"You certainly won't kill it."
The storm subsided. The ice spell had frozen both the creature and the sedan to the wall in a crystalline glacier. Dagfinn spit something from his mouth.
"It's not alone."
A pixie an inch taller than Tina writhed on the ground, clawing towards Dagfinn on its broken arms. What remained of the pixie's mummified flesh clung to its exposed bone. Blood gushed from Dagfinn's mouth, several of his teeth missing. Cole's boot finished off the pixie with a nauseating crunch.
"We should retreat."
"Right," William said, motioning for them to follow. Jack was a distant figure fleeing in the general direction of the furniture store. He would vanish, reappearing on the other side of anything that blocked him. Behind him, William heard the crackling of shattering ice. Stratton swept Dagfinn into his arms, chasing after William. Andrina ran alongside him, rubbing her friend's ears while he howled in pain. They were a few blocks from the library when the first police car skidded to a stop in front of the building. By the time the officer was talking to the woman with the cell phone, they reached the furniture store. The door was ajar, which William thought peculiar, considering Jack would have ignored the door popping on the other side. He held up a warning hand, easing the door open. As far as he could tell, the shop was almost exactly as they left it, except the rugs covering Baxter's dried blood were flipped over. In his haste, Jack could have rumpled a rug, possibly turning a corner. That would have explained the condition of one rug, but both were flipped, as if someone had deliberately looked under them.
"We have a problem," he warned, stepping inside.
A young woman's voice was saying,
"Not anywhere. There's blood on the floor."
She paused.
"No, Dad, I can't find him anywhere. I think we should call the police. Just a second, this might be..."
A college-aged woman walked out of the office. She was dressed in a black t-shirt with a goth pony glaring from her chest, a blood-red choker, and equally dark pants. She painted her lips a dark purplish red, which matched her gloomy eyeshadow. Frosted blue and pink stripes decorated the bangs of her short, spiky hair, a skull-shaped nose ring piercing her nostril. With her perky nose and expressive eyes, William thought she was almost attractive enough to be a fae. When she spotted him, she froze, reminding him of Hashimoto. He began to open his mouth when Stratton barreled past, carrying the whimpering Dagfinn. She stared open-mouthed as he tore past up the stairs. A man's voice on the phone said, "Are you still there? Hello? She'll call back." The young woman found her voice.
"Who are you? You don't work here."
"My name's Will. I'm a friend of..." The lights shuddered as a heavy darkness settled over the furniture store. The Fae shoved their way inside, Cole slamming the door shut.
"They're here."
Hendrina almost knocked the woman over as she ran for the stairs, stopping suddenly to reach for an arrow. A shadow loomed above her. A longsword with a blade blackened by magical glyphs stabbed downward just below her left breast. Cole charged. Hendrina took a step backwards, glancing at her palm. Silently, she slid sideways into Vincent's arms. Natsumi screamed. Elizabeth grabbed the mortal woman, pulling her away from the stairs. William couldn't move. He fidgeted with his walking stick, finally thrusting his hand into his shoulder bag. The only viable weapon available to him was the dagger. The hooded shadow descended on Cole, slicing and stabbing with his sword. Cole held his ground, blocking the blade with the hilt of his hammer, his features twisted with serious glee. The creature was shrouded in disintegrating monk robes, whose skeletal face stared emotionlessly from within the folds of the hood. Two fleshless hands wielded the blade, matching Cole's swings and shoves. Shadows materialized from beneath its robes, spreading ice along the stairs and dimming the lights. Frost formed on Cole's arms, slowing his movements. The box containing the dagger emerged from William's shoulder bag. Cole's hammer struck the floating entity in the sternum, pushing worthlessly into the skeleton's ribs. Before Cole realized what had happened, the creature slid the sword along the hammer's shaft, cleaving his neck. Cole's head and body hit the floor separately. The skeleton floated downward, threatening Elizabeth with its sword. She backed towards the door, keeping herself between the terrified women and the approaching monster. Shards of ice shot from her hand, shredding the black robes. The creature raised its blade as she crafted an ice buckler. The box snapped open. Clenching the dagger in one hand, William leapt at the ghostly monster. He didn't care that his hand was freezing over or that his entire body felt like it was melting. No one else was going to die. Elizabeth deflected the sword with her shield, falling to her knees. The ice cracked from the blow, the shield shattering. William stabbed upward into the skeleton's ribs. The blade hit the cloth, shearing bone. Sudden pain stabbed his chest. The sword landed beside Elizabeth, the skeleton thrashing as its bones shattered. The shadows wrapped around it, floating to the ground, forming a heap of black garments and dust. Elizabeth dragged William up the stairs. The pain subsided, but blood was flowing down his side.
"I think I can walk," he said in a frail voice as she carried William into Amarantha's dining room.
"Grandfather!"
the mortal woman screamed.
"Wait, how did I..."
Elizabeth lowered William into a chair, Stratton charging back into the furniture store. The dining table lay shattered next to a depression in the wall. Hashimoto leaned over him, checking William's side, while his granddaughter stood beside him, trying to fathom the madness around her. Hashimoto said,
"It's messier than deep. You should be fine if we stop the bleeding."
Jack wept into his cupped hands.
"She is dead. Please no, she can't be dead."
Stratton returned, carrying Cole's lifeless body over his shoulder, gripping Cole's head as if it were a football. He respectfully placed them on the ground, taking a coin from his pocket and placing it under Cole's tongue. Dagfinn rested his head on Hendrina's stomach, whimpering. Her fingers stroked his fur. Laying on her back, she looked more fragile than William ever imagined her. The blood coming from her wounds soaked the carpet. In a haze, William gripped her free hand. She smiled at him, hacking blood as she tried to say something. Stratton handed William Cole's flask, but before he could uncap the lid, the light faded from Hendrina's golden eyes.
"No,"
Dagfinn sniveled. William poured the entire flask into her mouth, the liquid pooling in the back of Hendrina's throat. Amarantha entered the room.
"That won't help her now."
"Get away from her,"
Vincent shrieked. Hendrina's body shuddered. The stench of decades' worth of decay exploded off her body. William lost his breath, his eyes watering as he vomited. The rancid goop that had once been Hendrina's flesh flowed around his knees, leaving behind a skeleton shrouded by the rotten remnants of her clothes.
"I may still be able to help her,"
Amarantha calmly said, waving for Vincent to carry Hendrina.
"Everyone that is wounded, follow me."
Vincent hesitated, but bundled the pile of bones into Hendrina's clothing, chasing Amarantha. Stratton carried a baying Dagfinn, while Jack half-heartedly followed them. William checked the wound on his side. The blood had stopped flowing, the injury magically sealed, leaving behind a gruesome pink scar.
"You should probably go with her,"
Hashimoto said, lifting William. William showed him the scar.
"That's lucky. You heal faster than your friend. You wouldn't know he'd been shot."
"Who's been shot?"
Hashimoto's granddaughter screamed.
"What the hell is going on? You left some message about plumbing and a vacation. Mom and Dad can't get a hold of you. There was this thing. That woman, she... What happened just now? How did I get here? Who is that?"
William wasn't listening. Natsumi and Elizabeth had gone deathly quiet and were backing into the far wall, motioning for them to follow. Fearing what he would find, William turned his head. Ma Vash stood next to the mirror, politely holding her hands in front of her lap.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Foothold Saga. You can follow Randall J. Wombeam on Facebook for updates about his writing, and the Foothold Saga on Twitter for updates about this podcast. To support this free audiobook, give us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.